Andrea.
Okay.
You probably noticed that there is a lot of information here.
I got my
approximately 171 pages. So first of all, I wanted to recognize staff and thank them for putting these together. There is a lot of information that they go over, and prep work, and the technical advisory committees that go through this before we receive it. And so I thank you very much. I'm Commissioner Jeff Scott, and I'm the chair of the Transcom Committee. Welcome, everybody. A special welcome to those interested citizens and folks from other organizations that have joined our call as well. One thing, our agenda item, as I spoke with Wayne Bennion, number six, we have a couple of folks that have another commitment that they need to be to later. And so if time gets a little bit short, we may move agenda item six forward and let them go before Ben updates us on our transportation improvement program, if that is okay with everybody. So also wanted to excuse Andrew Gruber, our executive director. He is moving his son today to college. So hopefully that goes well, and maybe he can join us a little bit later. Just one other thing we wanted to make you aware of. Many of you probably already know, and they may join us, probably will join us at our regional council meeting next week. There's been a couple of changes in the UDOT organization. Lisa Wilson, that was with Region 1, is now with Region 2. And Rob Wright, I believe it is. Yeah, Rob White is now the Region 1 director. And so take a chance to reach out to them, especially if they're in your region, and look forward to working with them and everything going forward. So today, as we go through this.
Commissioner.
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Do you have some contact information for Rob White that you could forward to us? Not necessarily in the link, but.
I do.
Oh, thank you. If you would, just email would be great. Thanks. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good. Thanks, Commissioner. No, we visit with them all the time. So we will miss Lisa in Region 1, but look forward to working with Rob. So. Today, as we go into our public comment, we know that there are some citizens that are on the call or on the Zoom meeting, and we welcome their input. Because we do have a very, very full agenda, what we would request is anybody that's going to speak to one of the projects in specific, if they would keep their comments to that project, please limit those to 2 or 3 minutes, and we'll have time for maybe 2 or 3 people to comment on these. I know especially on the Cottonwood projects, there was some interest. And so we do have that. So that's kind of a preface to our meeting. Our first item, hopefully everybody received their packets and had a chance to read over the minutes. Any questions or clarifications, corrections on those?
I'd move to approve the minutes as submitted.
Okay. Have a motion by Mayor Shepherd.
Second.
And a second by, who did that come from?
Rob Daly.
Rob Daly. Thanks, sir. Motion and a second to approve the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Okay. Any abstaining or opposed? All right. Very good. The minutes are approved.
And Commissioner? Okay.
Yes.
For the record, I just need to read the names of the attendees.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we got a roll call. Thanks, Andrea.
Yes. And I'm just going to read the list, and I'm not sure I'm going to know all of your last names. So if you'd like to type it in the chat, I can record it if you'd like me to. Okay. Senator Van Tassel. Oh, boy, everything's jumping around. Ellen, who is a guest, Commissioner Scott, Mayor Norm Searle, Chris Chestnut, Mayor Hale, several phone numbers, Council Member Ann Granato, Ari Bruning, Ben Hewitt, Beth Holbrook, Mayor Camp, Brigitte Mendel, Mayor Dandoy, Chris Bleak, Councilmember Clint Smith, Helen Peters, Mayor Silvestrini, Commissioner Harvey, Mayor Dolly, Josh, who I believe is a member of the public, Kathy, who is also a member of the public, Koshauer, I'm sure I butchered that, Mayor Call, Manjeet Ranu, Mayor Shepherd, Mary DiLoretto, Mayor Gailey, let's see, Pat Dennis, Patty Garver, Robert Miles, Ryan Perry, Shul Bishop, Steve Van Maren, Steve Call, Terry Newell, Travis Evans, Mayor Marshall, and several members of WFRC staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Appreciate that. Okay. At this time, we'll go ahead and open it up for public comment. We have had a couple of people that have spoken with us prior to this meeting and have specifically made a request to speak. Ellen Burrell with the Community Coalition Save Not Pave requested to speak today. And then a couple of other individuals specifically on the Cottonwood Canyons and nearby areas. So we'll go ahead and open that up to Ellen. And then if there's anybody else, we can probably do three. Please, again, 2 to 3 minutes each, and then we'll move into the next agenda item.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Scott. I really value the opportunity to come in front of the WFRC. For over a week now, and in the day's forecast, we know that it's orange here in Salt Lake County. Poor air quality, and none of you know, no one knows it better than all of you. And though we are all doing work to try to make things better, this poor air quality is really misrepresented to most citizens as only hard on sensitive groups. But we know that the science is coming out that this poor air quality is terrible for all of us. It's terrible for the unborn. It needs to be a high priority. And so, growingly, there are citizens re-engaging in their representative process like never before in my 39 years in Utah. I'm seeing people rise up to speak out for the needs of working class Americans. And this includes basic public health, the vital elements of clean air and safe streets. More cars moving at high speeds does not make for clean air nor safe streets. Save Not Pave is one of many growing community organizations. Well, Save Not Pave began in Cottonwood Heights in response to UDOT's announcement intending to widen Wasatch Boulevard with the LCC EIS to three times the asphalt footprint that Wasatch Boulevard is through Cottonwood Heights today. To this, we say no. And what residents increasingly, whether apartment dwellers, condo dwellers, or homeowners, what we want is mobility. Please give us mobility, not pollution. Move people, not cars. Of course, we need to move cars, but like in other places around the Western United States, many Utahns are in love with their vehicles, but this can change when people learn the health benefits of walking, bicycling, and utilizing transit. Freed from the financial burden of car payments, insurance, maintenance, and all the other physical burdens that go with cars, finding a parking space. We need the engagement of exercise that comes with active transportation and transit. And to accomplish this, we need from the WFRC even a more steadfast pace at planning, especially for our Southeast quadrant. And so anything that I can be a part of or the folks with Save Not Pave to help with the Southeast quadrant, we know that there's things afoot. Mayor Silvestrini took time with me earlier today, as others have, and we are very interested in moving ahead the process of getting a better transit plan. I know my time is limited. I had more to say, and I can submit that in writing in the future. But again, we ask that all of you put your leadership skills in, show us how we can collaborate and get our elected officials, whether it's in Cottonwood Heights or at the county level, even more engaged for a better air quality for Salt Lake County. Thank you very much.
Ellen, thank you very much for your comments. And again, we appreciate that. And if you do have additional items or data that you would like to bring to WFRC, please submit those. That would be wonderful. So thank you. Let's see, Andrea, did you have anybody else that had hit you up on chat or had specifically requested to speak? I had, I think, one other name that Wayne mentioned, but I wasn't sure if I saw that individual on the call.
This is Kathy Van Dame.
Okay.
I think you may be, I'm going to, I have been involved with air quality in Utah for over two decades now. I'm a past member of the Air Quality Board, and I did work with Mayor, the wonderful Mayor of Murray on some of her air quality projects. Anyway, recently I've been hearing Ted Knowlton and Andrew Gruber talk with some excitement about the changes in our emission profile due to the COVID and the window of opportunity that this presents for us to identify what kind of changes we want to promote keeping and which ones it is we want to outgrow. And so that made me think about an idea that's been percolating in the back of my mind for a while. And one of the things that is kind of at a crucial point right now is the Division of Air Quality staff has been working on a rule to create a PM 2.5 emissions bank so that emissions could be monetized. And for instance, and it could, there could be created some sort of permitting that's similar to an analogous area space permitting that it was developed in California, where if you have some place that's a big magnet of vehicles, that you enclose that property into some sort of boundary and you account for the emissions that are induced by that source. Anyway, Debbie Sigmund and I worked with Andrew and some of the other folks at the Wachatch Front Regional Council on that kind of permitting. That was one of our lower value, high impact, lower possibility of accomplishing remedies. But anyway, with the inland port right now and the change in energy, trying to figure out a good way to accommodate all of the disparate needs, the extraordinary high impact of air pollution on the communities that live in that area and all of that. Anyway, in the past, Utah has had passed legislation that does value in a monetary way emissions that are not put into the atmosphere. Some years ago, PacifiCorp and Jim Campbell passed some legislation. Anyway, this is the outline of an idea that is poorly developed, but there are some opportunities here. I think if there's anybody that is interested in trying to create a new opportunity out of the situation that we find ourselves in now. Thank you.
Kathy, thank you. That's an innovative idea. That if Ted and Andrew have been working on that and have had some ideas, maybe that's something that we can continue to move forward with the technical advisory committee. So thank you again. A message here in the chat from Josh Stewart. Josh, if you're on, if you'd like to go ahead and give us your comments.
Just really quickly, thank you, Wasatch Front. Just a comment, as I was reviewing the interactive comments, I didn't see a lot of money going towards State Street yet. And you guys all know that State Street is a regional corridor, and I was hopeful that some more planning and looking at State Street could occur in the next, 5 years, where we could look at lane reductions, more active transportation along State Street. I think that will go a long ways to transform the land use patterns, improve equity and safety along the State Street corridor, which is a true regional corridor. I know it seems like UDOT's holding on to the width of that street, the number of lanes. I think if it would be fantastic to see it slowing down and reducing the amount of lanes to really see that corridor transform. Anyway, that's my comment. Thank you for your great work, and hope to see State Street transform soon.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate your comments as well. Andrea, anybody else that that you've seen that's a private chat, or Wayne, anybody else?
Not that I have seen.
And Commissioner?
Uh-huh.
I do not see Alan Matheson, that Alan has joined yet, and so it looks like we would be...
Oh, I'm here.
There we go.
Oh, there we go. All right, Alan, if I remember right, you've got another commitment, so we've kind of got a hard stop for you at 3 o'clock. Is that correct?
That's right, but okay. We should be fine.
That would be great. If it's okay with everybody, we will skip forward if there's no more public comment. And we'll move to agenda item number 6. I will turn the time over to Alan Matheson. He's the executive director of the Point of the Mountain Authority Board. He's going to go ahead and share a perspective of what's happening there and the vision. And then we'll turn some time over to Patty Garver. She's the project manager. Hopefully she'll be on directly after Alan visits with us.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And as a former member of Transcom, it's good to be back. I think most of you are aware that the new prison site, state prison facility, is being constructed out west of the airport. And in about 2 years, that'll be completed, and they'll be moving the prisoners from the current site in Draper. That opens up one of the most promising and incredible economic development opportunities we've seen in the state. Essentially, we'll have a 700-acre blank canvas to develop in a way that accomplishes goals of the state. And based on a lot of public input and on some pillars that have been established by the legislature, we're looking at a place that will focus on economic opportunity, job creation, workforce development, sustainability will be a big part of it, innovation and research, and certainly transportation with a particular focus on transit. So we've been charged with planning this site, and a lot of work's been going on over the last few years to kind of lay the groundwork, everything from an extensive public process that involved over 4,000 people to the creation of the Point of the Mountain State Land Authority in 2018, and that's the organization that I lead. So we're really at kind of a critical point and about to launch a new phase in our efforts. Over the coming couple of weeks, you'll see a new logo, new website. We'll be doing a press conference, releasing some information that we've been developing with consultants on the market and what's happening in the market, what opportunities are there. And importantly, we'll be kicking off a planning phase. So we've hired a consultant to serve as a planning director. We'll be issuing an RFQ to the top planning firms around the country and even around the world in the next month. And then have a competition to kind of identify who we're going to select as our planning team for this site. We hope to have that process completed by the end of the calendar year. Then quickly heading into 2021, we'll ask that team to begin developing a framework plan for this site. You know, think of it as kind of a master plan that will identify what we want, where we want it. I think you can expect that it'll be a mixed-use area. You can expect that a significant portion of it will be an innovation district, a place for accelerators and startups and incubators, place with laboratory space, venture capital, mature companies, and trying to create an ecosystem that will stimulate innovation and the creation of new ideas, and then transforming those ideas into products that can be commercialized and add to our economy. I mentioned that there are a lot of pieces here, and we're going to take our time to do this right, but we hope to have this master plan finished in a year. We'll then work with getting a development team in place, refining the vision based on what happens in the market. But we know that a critical step in this is transportation and transit in particular. The statute that created the authority asks us to explore world-class transit. And that's kind of a high bar, but that's what the legislature's asked for. And we think that's important. One, we're going to need to have a good sense for what transit is going to be available to this site as we start the master plan. That'll be part of the armature around which we build. And beyond that, we're going to be starting some recruitment efforts to see if we can bring in some of the top biotech, high tech, and other companies around the world. They're going to be very interested, and they've already told us they're very interested in making sure that they have good, high quality transit to serve them. So we think that's going to be an essential element to this project. Beyond that, tying into the road systems in the area, making sure that we're not overwhelming already stretched roads, and that we have a good network that's created. So we're excited. We think this is a terrific opportunity. It's going to be a community project. We're going to work together to get it right, and we look forward to working with you more as we move down the road. Thank you.
Alan, thank you. That's a big project. Will this have anything to do with the inland port? Do you envision the two sites working together and having a collaboration?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, kind of going in at about the same time, certainly in different geographical areas and different organizations that are developing them. But it would be a missed opportunity if we didn't grow in collaboration. And you can think of various ways that might happen. You know, I think the inland port is going to be more about logistics and manufacturing opportunities. Our site's going to be a little bit more about, you know, kind of corporate offices and innovation. Yet you can think that Utah's pretty good at innovation. We've created a lot of new ideas, but we haven't been able to manufacture them here. And so a lot of the manufacturing has been shipped out of the state. With the development of the inland port, we may be able to create a bigger economic ecosystem that will provide some synergies between the two. So we've been in conversations with them, we'll continue to be.
No, that makes a lot of sense, thank you. Andrew, you had a comment.
Yeah, just thank you very much, Commissioner. Alan, this work at Point of the Mountain that you're coordinating has been a great example already of Utah's collaboration. And I wonder, it may perhaps as a lead-in to Patty from UTA, could you just take a moment to talk about the relationship between the work that's happening through the Point of the Mountain State Land Authority and the work, the broader work that occurs with Wasatch Front Regional Council, Mountain Land Association of Governments, UDOT, UTA, the cities and the counties? Like, what is the, how is that collaborative tissue coming together for this project?
Well, thanks for asking, Andrew, and that's a good question. Collaboration is essential. This is a state project, so state land means we all have a stake in it and want to make sure that we do this right. And I'm not naive enough to believe that we can come up with the right plans alone. It's got to be done in the context of our regional system. So we've got 700 acres, but if we focus just on that 700 acre parcel, we're going to miss opportunities and we'll make mistakes. So we're committed to working in the broader regional context, including with the MPOs, the surrounding communities, the transportation agencies. Now that happening in different forms. You might be aware that the Point of the Mountain Development Commission a couple of years ago conducted an extensive public process. Over 4,000 people were involved, including all of the transportation and planning agencies, and developed a broad vision for the Point of the Mountain region. You might think kind of Sandy to Saratoga Springs. Now, our focus is narrower than that, but we know that it has to be in that broader context. So we've created working groups that are looking at infrastructure and land use, education, research, and innovation opportunities, air quality, environment, and more. So we've included representation from surrounding communities. We've included representation from the MPOs and the transportation entities. We're also working on the alternatives analysis. We're hoping to have, continue to have regular meetings outside of those processes with the MPOs and others. We're not going to develop in isolation. So good question, Andrew, and you have our commitment that we want to work with WFRC, MAG, and others to make this work in our broader region.
Very good. Thank you, Alan. Is Patty, has she joined us yet? Have you seen her on your way? Oh, there we go. Patty, go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Patty Garver. I'm the UTA project manager for the Point of the Mountain Transit Study. And I'm going to tell you where we are in our study. But before I do that, I wanted to introduce you to our new director of capital projects, Manjeet Renu. He has been at UTA now for, I think this is his seventh week. And of course, he's been drinking from a fire hose. So I'm going to invite him to introduce himself and tell you about himself. Manjeet?
Thank you, Patty, and thanks to the Transcom here today and Andrew as well. I appreciate the opportunity to serve here at UTA as the Director of Capital Projects. It's just been a few weeks, but I've been coming to Utah most of my life to recreate here, so I'm familiar with the area, and it's nice to be able to access everything closely. I have a background in land use and transportation, and I'm in this field because I like to promote that collaboration and access to opportunity, and really excited to be a part of the project that we're talking about right now, as well as our greater portfolio in terms of what we're looking at in the future, but also taking care of what we have today. And I've heard a lot of great things about this region, how it does collaborate very well together, and I'm happy to be a part of it and looking forward to working with you and everyone else who intersects with the work that we do. So thank you for the opportunity to introduce myself.
Hey, thanks, Manjeet. I have a presentation that I am going to show you. So, just as background, we started our project to look at a high capacity rapid transit connection between southern Salt Lake County and northern Utah County. And talking about collaboration, this is a team effort. We are working with UDOT, and it's not just a UTA project. We're working with UDOT, the cities, the MPOs, the counties, Point of the Mountain State Land Authority, other state agencies and local agencies, and we also have some private partners. And we are building on previous projects, most notably the vision that Alan was just talking about. And then UDOT and UTA also did a transportation analysis to look at the top transportation and transit projects identified in that vision. And our project was one of the top priority projects. So UDOT and UTA decided to complete an alternatives analysis. So talking about the area, if you were going to describe Draper to someone relative to a transportation project, what would you talk about? Well, to begin with, the area is just growing like crazy. It's projected, as you know, to double within the next 30 years. And there's a large amount of area for development and redevelopment that is near the urban areas and would be great for transit. And also the area has the topographical constraints of the mountains present challenges for transportation, which points back to our project and how we could help the area. So as part of our project, we look at the goals and objectives and what our purpose and need is for the project. So what is it we're trying to do? We're trying to improve access between existing and planned developments. And we're trying to support the transportation demands that will come with the projected population growth, the doubling in population within the next 30 years, and also how that will affect employment in the area. And also, we are looking at one of the important evaluation criteria for our project is land use and economic development and how that would affect the area. Economic development is an important part of our transit project. Sorry, my phone is ringing in the background in case you can hear it. So where are we now? So we have been looking at alignments that are on both the east and the west side of I-15. And we are trying to connect Sandy and or Draper on the north end with Lehigh on the south end. And we've been looking at both light rail and bus rapid transit, and we've done combinations of those two modes. And then all of our alternatives connect to the prison site. So we started out with 5 alternatives and we've kind of narrowed it down to 3 versions of those alternatives. We'll have 2 levels of evaluation and we're kind of right in the middle of both of them. So we're moving into level 2. So I wanted to mention that yesterday we held an economic development roundtable. And the purpose of it was to talk to subject matter experts to help guide us as far as economic development and transit investment and how that could help both our project and the area. And so we talked about economic development, land use, and mode. And the panel was made up of subject matter experts that were, most of them were actually regional, but they also have national experience, and also with as far as transit and how the mode could affect economic development. And I think it was a really great discussion. I think we learned a lot and it will help us to guide our study. So where are we headed? So it has been a year. And we've come a long ways. We started out defining the goals and objectives. We looked at the beginning 5 alternatives. We've refined our alternatives and we've worked very closely with Wasatch Front on they are actually doing the travel demand modeling. And we are hoping to have our locally preferred alternative by late fall. And this, speaking of Alan, this is very important for his process. And so by the end of the year, we'll have our LPA and then we'll be able to move into environmental and then ultimately design and engineering. So that is where we are. Any questions?
No, that was excellent, Patty. Does anybody have any questions from Patty or Alan before they have to take off? Nobody. You guys did way too good of a job in presenting that. So,
Mr. Chair, can I make a comment on this?
Oh, I understand.
This is Ted Knowlton on the staff at WFRC. I think this has been a really interesting and rewarding project, and I think it has implications for transportation planning beyond this site that I just wanted to mention that, you know, a lot of projects will, you know, rightly look at questions like how well might different solutions move people, how much would those different solutions cost, but they don't necessarily always explicitly ask the question, how would those different solutions affect something that doesn't necessarily affect mobility directly. So don't necessarily ask the question, how would one route or one mode or what have you really lead into achieving economic development goals? And so having a study like this one that says, well, hey, we're gonna explicitly consider economic development in the criteria it's not common. It will become common, but I think just that act alone, I think makes it an interesting one for this group to learn about and to understand, well, what are the implications for transportation planning, perhaps for other projects and for even for regional planning.
Yes, sir, Scott, can I throw something else on top of it?
Go ahead, Carlton.
I think one of the things that we're learning as we go through this process, and Patty and the rest of the team are doing a great job on it, but there are other studies currently being done. For example, in Utah County, UDOT is conducting a study known as the Central Corridor Study, and it would tie into this general area. And I know that we've long been working on a project to the southwest part of Salt Lake County that potentially could tie somehow into this area. So trying to coordinate those studies and also make sure that you know, one solution supports another option down the road is really important and part of that dialogue. This is such a linchpin in our whole transportation corridor along the Wasatch Front that trying to figure out how that weaves through there is going to be an important long-term decision, both for the site where the current prison sits, as well as the rest of the developments that are happening in that part of the region.
Well, in that vein, I would mention that we're working closely together. A lot of our team members were on both projects, and actually one of the consultants, Parametrics, is on both projects. So I think we're having some great coordination for both projects.
Very good. Patty, Alan, thank you. We look forward to more updates and anything that we can do to assist. I know that WFRC is actively involved as well as MAG. So this is good info. So thank you very much. And
thank you.
Okay. We'd skipped ahead, so we will go ahead and move back. We'll turn a bunch of time over to Ben Withrich. We have some board modifications for the 2020-2025 TIP, and so we'll turn it over to Ben. One thing that will be just a little bit different today, since we do have our council meeting next week, on the action items today, we would be making recommendations to the council as a whole, and they would act on those next week. So just keep that in mind as Ben goes through and talks about these board modifications.
Wonderful. Thank you, Commissioner or Chair. So today we do have a unique opportunity here as we will review two items. One will be the action or the recommendation on the board modification to the existing 2020-25 Transportation Improvement Program. And the second one will be action to recommend the approval of the 2021-2026 Transportation Improvement Program and the corresponding air quality conformity finding. So in your meeting materials, you'll have a resolution, and attached to that resolution are several tables. It was pointed out in a text, in fact, I just got it about 3 minutes ago. Thank you, Kevin, that there's some numbers that copied wrong. I will clarify that in the discussion as we move to it. But if I forget or go past it, please bring that back to my attention. But the tables will identify the various projects that have been requested to be modified in the existing transportation improvement program. We will go through each project fairly quickly. The first project is a project in Sandy City. This project will realign the intersection of 9270 South between State Street and 150 East. The intent of this project is to realign the facility and the intersection, improve the mobility and the safety, and which will improve the mobility and safety in all the directions for vehicle, pedestrian, and bicycle traffic. The request before us today is a request for additional funding. The project cost increase is as a result of additional right-of-way when the design was in and the curvature or the construction necessary for the facility. But also there was some significant project delay due to some environmental issues in this project. So currently this project stands the funding at $6.4 million. The updated estimated project cost is $7.3 million, leaving us a shortfall of $900,000. Sandy City is requesting that we add an additional $800,000 of the Salt Lake West Valley Urban STP funds, and that they would come to the table with an additional $100,000. The next project is in Little Cottonwood Canyon. This is the Little Cottonwood Canyon EIS project. This project was funded from the Recreational Hotspots Program to find long-term solutions to improve the safety, reliability, and the mobility of SR 210. The project began in 2018 to develop alternatives to meet these goals. However, meeting these goals while meeting the needs of local stakeholders proved to be very complex. In 2019, the project added additional alternatives to ensure stakeholder concerns were heard and addressed while seeking the most viable solution. The work for these additional alternatives includes the development, design, and screening of additional alternatives, additional public outreach such as council meetings, open houses, stakeholder meetings, etc., travel demand modeling for the screening of additional alternatives, developing the draft and final EIS, including the record of decision. To complete these projects, we need to add an additional $2.5 million to this project. These additional funds will come from the Little Cottonwood Canyon Recreational Hotspot Project. The next project happened back in March 18th of 2020. We experienced right along with the early stages of the coronavirus pandemic an earthquake along the Wasatch Front. Immediately, personnel from UDOT Region 2 and the Structures Division were out inspecting our roads and structures for damage and immediately began work after the earthquake occurred. The efforts were originally funded through the Bridge Preservation Program. These activities consisted of three projects. The first project was emergency inspections that occurred immediately after the earthquake and emergency repairs that were completed to reopen a closed structure. The second project consisted of the repairs to two structures with the most critical damage. And the third project was for the repair of the remaining four structures that had damage resulting from the earthquake. The Utah Division of Federal Highway Administration, or FHWA, approved $2.1 million in federal reimbursement for the activities related to the earthquake damage. This board modification will allow these federal emergency funds to reimburse the bridge preservation program. The next project, or the next projects will come from the following table. These are three projects in the Tooele area. The first of these projects will construct a missing sidewalk on the south side of Durfee Street. This is between Willow Street and the LDS Chapel. This project is funded with unprogrammed congestion mitigation air quality, or CMAQ funds, that are allocated to the Tooele area for the federal fiscal year of 2020-2021. This project was recommended by the Tooele Valley RPO, or Regional Planning Organization, at their meeting on March 20th, or in March of this past year, or of this year. The next project, also in Tooele County, is also a project that'll construct missing sidewalk on the east side of Kirk Street between Pear Street to Durfee Street. This project will also be funded with the unprogrammed congestion mitigation air quality, or CMAQ funds, allocated to the Tooele area for the fiscal year of 2020-2021, and was also recommended by the Tooele Valley RPO in their March meeting. The last of these three projects in Tooele County is the construction of a park and ride facility. This is west of Lamb Lane and north of SR 138. This project will also be funded with congestion mitigation air quality, or CMAQ funds, that are allocated to the Tooele area for the same federal fiscal year of 2020-2021. And this project was recommended by the Tooele Valley RPO at their meeting on June 8th of this year. The next tables in the meeting materials are the recreational trails program. Now, this is where I inadvertently copied the wrong numbers here. So if you'll notice on this first table here, that there's a lot of projects that have a funding amount of $50,000 and are all valued at $206,000. Well, that's more than coincidence. That was, I just entered the wrong numbers. So we will provide the correct information on that tables, but the tallies and totals are correct when we get into talking on the numbers. So the recreational trails program was authorized by Congress as part of the Intermodal Surface Transportation Efficiency Act of 1991. This program has been continued through the current FAST Act transportation authorization. These projects are selected and administered through the Utah State Parks and Recreation Division. Funds may be used to provide and maintain trails for motorized and non-motorized recreational uses, including trailside, trailhead facilities, as well as provisions to facilitate access for people with disabilities. The Recreational Trails Program, or RTP as they refer to it, has 44 projects this year, totaling more than $2.2 million in the federal funds, and bringing also with that $5.5 plus million of sponsor matching funds, for a total of $7.7 plus million in new project value. There are 22 projects that are totaling with a combined federal and local match of $6.3 plus million in the Wasatch Front area. This would conclude all of the projects that are part of this board modification before the body this day or today.
Thank you, Ben. We appreciate your knowledge and your detail on these projects. Does anybody have any question on any of these projects specifically, or any of the modifications? Okay. With the numbers that you talked about that were basically cut and pasted, Ben, but the numbers on the projects themselves were accurate in the presentation?
The total on the amount that was total programmed those numbers were correct, but there's about 8 projects on that slide that I need to correct the amounts. They were actually not cut and paste. Those were hand entered, and that's where I dropped it. I didn't hand enter the right ones.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Having said that, is there enough information, or do we need some additional clarification on those before we make a recommendation to the full council? Any thoughts on that, Ben, Andrew, maybe Ted, Wayne?
I would just say if there's, with regard to correcting the numbers, we can certainly do that in the materials that are sent to the full council for approval. So okay. with that understanding, I would say that we're good for Transcom to take action to make the recommendation for approval to the council.
Terry, I would, or Jeff, I would move that we send this on with recommendation to the council for approval with the corrected supporting documents. This is okay. Mike Daly.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor. We have a motion to send this on to the full council with the recommendation of approval.
Second.
Have a second from Commissioner Harvey. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Very good. Thank you very much, Ben. We'll continue to leave the meeting with Mr. Woodridge, and we'll move on to our 2021-2026 Transportation Improvement Program, and then we'll also go into our air quality conformity analysis.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is one hot item. This is item 4B. Whoops, we already jumped. Look how excited the TIP 2126 TIP is to get right into the picture. Didn't even let the flames burn any longer. But the Transportation Improvement Program, as you're aware or familiar with, this is a 6-year program of highway transit and active transportation projects. The first 4 years are what we refer to as funded. The 2-out years are what we refer to as concept development. It's for the urban areas in the Salt Lake West Valley urban area, the Ogden-Layton urban area. Essentially, our area goes from Brigham City up in Box Elder County all the way down to the Salt Lake, Utah County boundary. Funded with federal, state, and local funds, and for all of the cities, the counties, UDOT and UTA. It implements all the long-range plans for our highway transit and active transportation. It helps us meet the short-range needs as well as the maintenance of our existing system. Transportation Improvement Program lists all of the projects from new construction, rehab and maintenance, safety and intelligent transportation systems, transit, operating and maintenance, and pedestrian and bikes. I know a picture's worth 1,000 words, so I'm gonna give you quite a few here and quick, but I just like to highlight a few of the projects that we have. Here are examples of some new construction or widening projects that are taking place along the Wasatch Front. Along with that, we have those projects that are for rehab and maintenance type projects along the Wasatch Front, all sorts of projects. In addition to our rehab and maintenance type, we have our transit projects. With as much value and as importance as our pedestrian and our bicycle or our active transportation improvements along the Wasatch Front. So these projects represent millions of dollars as we identify and work with them. There's thousands of jobs the economic growth and the development throughout our communities, the improvements to our mobility and access to opportunities, the preservation of the quality of life of which we have become accustomed to. The transportation improvement program must be financially constrained. These 6 years of projects must be financially constrained. They conform to the air quality. They are reviewed by the public and approved by the regional council. This body back in June on the 27th, approved that on the 27th, we begin the public review and comment period, which went all the way through the 8th of August. During that time, we also had two public open houses, virtual public open houses. We had one on Zoom and one on Google Meets. We then took all of that information before the public comment period concluded, which was our technical advisory committees made up of all the city engineers and many of the public works and other city staff. And we bring this information before Transcom today for your review and recommendation to the regional council, which will be meeting next Thursday. So as part of our extensive outreach on the transportation improvement program, we had, through our public comment period, opportunities to not only talk with individuals, project sponsors, and citizens and city staff, but we also had an interactive map of which we obtained almost 85 to 100 comments throughout both processes. Those comments came on project specific, or they had the opportunity to give us comments in a general comment form. Included in your meeting materials is a list of those public comments. And in addition to that material, we also have a summary of the comments that were given. And our intent as staff, with also our partners with the Department of Transportation, with Utah Transit Authority, and local governments where the project is specific, we will coordinate our efforts with them as we prepare the responses. And then we will take this information and we will consider it as we move forward on projects, that these comments are considered, that parts are pointed out, and if necessary, things are changed. I had a summary of the wrapping up on what the slide was, but there were, if I can just read these to you, for whatever reason, the slide's not showing up. But our public comment themes were safety, a consideration including the speed. Another one was environmental considerations, including community, economic, historic, farmland, open spaces, air quality, and the natural environment. Racial justice, consideration in transportation design and operation, art, beauty, and landscaping as part of a project delivery, and commercial vehicle size and electric vehicle restrictions were suggested on specific canyon facilities. These were just some of these just summarize or reflect upon many of the comments we received. We did all that we possibly could to have a respective response, and felt that we had a fairly substantial public engagement opportunity this year. But that is all the information I have, Commissioner or Mr. Chair, in the presentation for the recommendation of the 2021-2026 Transportation Improvement Program and its air quality conformity analysis.
Ben, thank you. Very thorough. And as I was telling Wayne when I spoke with him this morning, we really appreciate all the work that the staff puts in, and also the technical advisory committee. There's literally hundreds of projects and all of the background and all the work that's done before it reaches us. And thank you very much. Were there any questions on the 2021-2026 TIP?
Yeah, Jeff, this is Kevin Cromer. Can I ask a question?
Please.
Ben, thank you so much. I really enjoyed reading all the public comments in our packets. I'm sure all of us enjoyed that. Thank you for including them. I think it's fair to say a lot of people feel disillusioned whether they actually have an opportunity to make any impact or change when making public comments. And to some extent, their opportunity may be limited because these projects are complex and they've gone through lengthy planning processes. I was just wondering if you have any examples you could give us of comments that were received and changes that were made as a result of those comments. Even if it's small, could you provide us any examples where that's happened?
Thank you, Kevin. Well, I think we had an excellent example today. We actually had a board modification that come before this body on regarding the environmental impact study that's being done on the Little Cottonwood Canyon. There was a request to add an additional $2.5 million to that project for the specific purpose to address those public inputs, that public involvement, and that opportunity to interact and work well with the community and the public at large. A lot of the comments we've received on these projects specific, what we will do as staff. So at this point where it just ended here just a couple of weeks ago, we will go back through each project and we will address it specifically to what they are responding to. And then we will either with the Department of Transportation, the Utah Transit Authority, or a local government, coordinate with them in our efforts to make sure that those comments are considered in the project. They may have an impact. We saw that on that board modification today. They may just have a good idea that's already been addressed in a prior conversation. But each time we hear from the public and we take that pretty serious. I know the department and UTA takes those comments very serious. This public comment period that we had for the TIP was specifically for the TIP. All of us are always open to receive public input and public comment on anything as we move forward, realizing that as the stewardship we have to coordinate the efforts and the benefits for our transportation system along the Wasatch Front, I think it's our responsibility to get and gather all the information possible.
Yep, Ben, you guys are always very respectful of all the comments. And if there are any, as we continue through the process, specific examples of a comment received and it ended up being something that could be incorporated or included in some way, it'd be great if we could get some feedback on that in the future so we can have positive stories to communicate back to the public. I think that'd be great if we could start collecting some of those success stories. But thanks for being respectful of all the comments. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin, and we will.
Can I add one brief point to that to supplement what Ben said? I also want to note that we receive comments that are specific to particular projects. We also receive general comments and have for years. And one of the themes that emerged from the comments this year, and I think it's been a consistent theme, has been a interest in having more investment in our transit system and also in active transportation. In addition to making the important and necessary investments in our state and local road systems. That's not a comment about a specific project in the TIP. It's a broader comment. And as I noted, that's something we've been hearing for years. And I would say that in response to that, and consistent with our long-range transportation plans, we have actually put additional resources into transit and active transportation. And when I say we, I'm not just talking about the Wasatch Front Regional Council. I'm talking about the state legislature that is making progress in that regard. I'm talking about UDOT directing some of its resources to active transportation, and the cities and counties for that matter. So I think Kevin's point is a good one. We can see the ripple effects of comments that are made not just on specific projects, but on the broader turning of the ocean liner, if you will, over time.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Ben, thanks again. Any other questions or comments on the 21-26 TIP? Okay, very good. I would entertain a motion. That is another action item.
Commissioner, this is Clint Smith with Harriman City. I'll make a motion to approve the recommendations in the 21-2026 TIP.
Okay. And could we also include the air quality conformity analysis in that as well?
Affirmative. I'll include that in my motion.
Thank you, sir.
Ms. Mayor Hale, I second that motion by Commissioner or Councilman Smith.
Very good. Thank you. We have a motion and a second to send a recommendation on to the full council. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Any opposed? Very good. Thanks again, Ben.
Thank you.
We will now turn some time over to Christy Dahlberg. She's got some information on funding opportunities for local governments to present to us.
Christy, if you're talking, you're muted.
Okay, can you hear me now?
There she is. Yep.
Okay, good. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. And thank you, Katie, for helping me out presenting the slide deck. So I'm just going to go through the funding opportunities that we offer here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. If you go to the next slide, please, Katie. Thank you. So the Wasatch Front Economic Development District is a federally recognized economic development district operating under the auspices of Wasatch Front Regional Council. The mission is to support existing economic development efforts, promote long-term economic competitiveness, and attract federal monies to implement local plans. The district has a 12-member governing board and a 13-member strategy committee. Together, these groups guide our region's economic development opportunities and assist in the development of a regional economic development plan. The Wasatch Front Economic Development District works with the U.S. Economic Development Administration to fund projects and support planning activities. The EDA funds projects that result in high-skill, high-wage job opportunities. Funding in must equal jobs out. To give you an idea of the types of eligible projects, this slide shows three example project ideas. As you can see, they range from planning to construction to workforce training, with amounts that vary almost as much from $100,000 to $2 million. On the next slide, highlights three of EDA's funding programs. These are pots of money that applicants can apply to. Under the program name is the amount of funding that can be awarded and the types of projects or outcomes eligible for each program. Funds are available on an annual rolling basis, and our staff, along with EDA, would love to talk to any of our communities about their ideas. If you have any questions about the Economic Development District, please contact Scott Hess at the Wasatch Front Regional Council for more information. On the next slide, we'll talk about the Community Development Block Grant Program. WFRC administers the Community Development Block Grant Small Cities Program to the less populated areas of our region, including Morgan, Tooele, and Weber counties, excluding Ogden City. CDBG is funded by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and is intended to provide decent housing and a suitable living environment, principally for persons of a low or moderate income. On this slide is a representation of eligible project types. There is a wide range of eligible activities from safety equipment purchases, ADA upgrades, and public utilities and infrastructure. Public service providers are also eligible for funding, but only 15% of total WFRC funds can be spent on that activity. On the next slide are a few examples of projects that were funded in the FY 2020 cycle. The FY 2021 cycle will start at the How to Apply workshop this fall in the next couple of months. If you have any questions regarding CDBG, please reach out to me, Christy Dahlberg at WFRC. Next, we'll talk about the Transportation Land Use Connection Program. The Transportation and Land Use Connection Program is our planning technical assistance program helping communities achieve their community aspirations and implement the Wasatch Choice Regional Vision. The program is a partnership with UDOT, UTA, and Salt Lake County, and there's approximately $1.5 million in annual funding for TLC. The program goals are to maximize the value of investment in public infrastructure, enhance access to opportunities, increase travel options to optimize mobility, and create communities with opportunities to live, work, and play. Eligible projects are planning efforts that meet these goals. TLC meets communities where they are and works to move them through the steps toward implementation. TLC funds plans, policies, and helps with final implementation on the ground, as well as supporting supporting cities where they are and studies analysis along the way. If you have a project idea that you want to discuss, we encourage you to reach out to Megan Townsend and our TLC staff. Next, we'll talk about the STP, CMAC, and TAP programs, which we'll get into more detail about, and then just spend some time talking about. The Wasatch Front Regional Council has the responsibility to coordinate the programming of three federal funds in the urbanized area, the Surface Transportation Program, or STP, the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality, or CMAC, and the Transportation Alternatives Program, or TAP funds. The STP funds are apportioned to WFRC every year at the amount of over $20 million for the Salt Lake West Valley urban area and over $10 million for the Ogden-Layton urban area. This slide shows the eligible STP project types. Funds can be used on any road that is a federal aid eligible facility, which is a collector, arterial, highway, or freeway. Funds can construct new roads or widen existing facilities, reconstruct existing facilities, improve roadway operation, and implement transit improvements. On the next slide, you'll see a STP project example from 5600 West between 6200 South and 70th South. It was a narrow two-lane road with some shoulder sidewalks, curb and gutter on the east side only. With STP funds, the project sponsor was able to widen 5600 West to four lanes of traffic, a center turn lane and a bike lane, shoulder, curb, gutter, and sidewalk with lighting on both sides of the road. Next, we'll talk about the CMAC program. The CMAC funds are apportioned to WFRC every year at the amounts of over $5 million for the Salt Lake West Valley urban area and over $3 million for the Ogden-Layton urban area. Eligible CMAC project types can be used on projects that improve air quality. They can expand public transportation facilities and equipment, diesel engine retrofits, idle reconstruction, IM programs, and alternative fuels and vehicles. They can also improve traffic flow or operations such as intersection improvements and bike and ped facilities. Next, we'll look at a CMAC project example. These are examples of past CMAC projects along the Wasatch Front. Following that, we'll talk about Transportation Alternatives Program. The TAP funds are apportioned to WFRC every year at the amounts of just over $930,000 for the Salt Lake West Valley urban area and just over $500,000 for the Ogden-Layton urban area. Eligible TAP projects can be used on a variety of activities related to improving transportation assets, including on and off-road pedestrian and bicycle facilities, environmental mitigation, creating or improving recreational trail projects, and safe routes to school projects. The following slide is an example of the TAP project. A good example of TAP project that highlights recreational and commuter use is the D and RG trail, rail trail that runs through Davis and Weber counties. Finally, we'll talk about WFRC funding program deadlines. This process of identifying and selecting eligible projects takes place every year. We initiate the process by requesting letters of intent in August, which will be due by the end of September. And in October, we request the sponsor to prepare and submit a project evaluation concept report or application, which will be due back to WFRC by the middle of December. During the spring of 2021, project recommendations will be presented to the various committees and boards for approval. And then on the last side, we have the contact information for all the program managers. Feel free to reach out to any of us or anyone at WFRC. If you don't know which funding source your application falls under, feel free to send it to anyone, and we'll work together to make sure that it gets put into the right funding program. And I apologize to those of you who had to listen to me give that presentation twice today. And with that, I will turn it back to you, Chair.
Thanks, Christy. Just to echo what Christy said, and I think it was mentioned earlier in the meeting, we don't always know necessarily what a project would go under. And so WFRC staff is excellent at evaluating the project and suggesting which funding source may be applicable. So excellent information, and we need to pass that on to the folks in our municipalities so that we can have funding for those projects. So very good.
Mr. Chair?
Wayne?
Do you mind if I just supplement a bit?
Please.
In addition to what you and Christy have said?
Please.
Thank you. So yes, we just wanted to make you aware of how to apply for these six different programs. There's about 45 million available, between 40 and 45 million available annually, typically. And so we know there's a 5 or 10 to 1 request ratio to that 40 to 45 million. We're happy to report that we're able to find many projects each year. And so we'd encourage you to watch for that the letters of intent that'll be sent out next week, and make sure and fill out a letter of intent. Like both Commissioner Scott and Christy have mentioned, don't worry about if you've got the right program. We'll just send in the letter of intent in September, and we'll help you out. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thanks again, Wayne. Okay, any other questions or comments on these? Okay. We'll move on to our next item. We have Robert Miles with UDOT's Division Director of Traffic and Safety. He's got a presentation to us on safe routes to school. So we'll go ahead and turn the time over to Robert.
I appreciate that, Commissioner Scott. Thank you for your time. I actually have something even better. I've got one slide on a presentation that I will share, and then I've got two experts to talk about the work that we are doing in this area. Let's see if I get this done the right way. Excuse me one moment. There, hopefully you're seeing our presentation homepage slide. So again, I'm Robert Miles, I'm the Director of Traffic and Safety, and I'm here today with Kristen Hoschauer, who is our Behavioral Programs Manager, and Travis Evans, who runs our Safe Routes to School grant program. We're gonna start with Kristen's presentation here. Just one moment. Kristen, are you on?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me? Okay. Hi, I'm Kristen Hoschauer. I'm with the UDOT Department of Transportation, and I'm the program manager for the Safe Routes Utah program. Thank you, Robert, for that introduction. Some of you might know the Safe Routes program as SNAP, formerly known as Student Neighborhood Access Program. In 2018, we changed it to the Safe Routes Utah program. We felt like this better reflected what the program is about. And you can see here, this is our homepage on our website, and we changed that in 2019. And this is kind of the hub of the whole Safe Routes Utah program. And I'm gonna go over a little bit more about the program. Robert, can you change the next slide?
Absolutely.
Great. So one of the biggest parts of Safe Routes Utah is the mapping feature that we have. And under Utah State Code, every school is required to have a safe walking and biking route map for their schools. Every public, elementary, junior high, and middle school is required. And so the Safe Routes Utah program provides a software program that schools can use to make that map very easily. It's a very simple program. You can see on this website that we have some guides and we have some planning guides and some software user guides that they can use. It's really great that they can just simply put it together. A lot of times the schools, it's their principal who's putting it together or their vice principal that's putting the map together. And they form committees with their principal, with local law enforcement, with local engineers and parents to make these maps that they provide to the student, that they provide to the parents and students. And so they log this map onto our website, and then parents can go online and go to their school. And a lot of times the schools will have a link to the Safe Routes Utah website where they can look at their maps. Schools are responsible for getting these maps out to the parents. But it's nice on our website, you just click on that button and it says, you know, find your school's walking route map. And they just click on that button and they can find their district and their school, and it will just pop up this walking route map for their kids to walk safely to school. And it, you know, it provides that route where there's crossing guards, a lot of times where there's sidewalks. And then another big part of the Safe Routes Utah program, and you can advance to the next slide, Robert, is our assembly. And we have two different assemblies. The first assembly is the one that we've done the most, and it was the one we started it last year, and it's grades 1 through 3, and it's called Beat the Streets. And it is for first through third graders, and it's really cool. It's like a video game concept where these little characters teach the students the safest way to be a pedestrian and, you know, how to cross on a crosswalk, to look both ways. It's just a really fun presentation that, you know, they level up to the next level, and it's just very fun and interactive. The fourth and sixth grade presentation is kind of the Fortnite style. We feel like fourth and sixth graders are really into Fortnite, and it has like the cool characters and the fun dance moves. And we haven't rolled this one out yet. We actually just started on this presentation, and it will be going out this next school year. So if you go to the next slide, Robert. So this next slide, you can see that in 2019 and 20, we had 77 Beat the Streets assemblies at schools all over Utah until COVID hit. And this next year, we're partnering with 8 local health departments, and the health department employees are the ones who actually go out and present it. So we teach them how to do this presentation, and they're the ones who go to the schools. And this next year, we'll be offering both in-person and online, because we know that there are a lot of schools that aren't meeting in person. And a lot of times they can't have an assembly. They can't bring all their students together. So a lot of time we'll have the option of them doing it in a classroom or doing it online. And we're also adding an interactive online quiz, so we can actually see if the kids have learned something. We've learned a lot and found that the best way to know if what we're teaching them is sinking in is if we can quiz them on it. So we'll be doing that as well. And move on to the next slide. And then one of the really fun thing that we have are prizes. We want to motivate these kids to walk and bike to school. And this is a year-long program. It's called Walk and Roll Challenge. And each month, parents can go in and log the dates that their kids walked and biked to and from school. And they're entered in to win prizes. And each month, we award scooters and helmets to kids who, you know, they're pulled out of a drawing. And so you're entered in more times every time you walk or bike to school every month. And we do that every month, even in January and February. And we just want to encourage kids to bundle up and walk to school or bike to school during those winter months. But this upcoming school year, we're doing something a little bit special. We'll be partnering with Move Utah to accommodate students of all types of schooling, homeschooling, online. Students can enter each day they walk or bike to and from school, or every day they walk or bike for 20 minutes outside if they are being schooled online. So we wanted to be able to have, you know, every kid who's in school, whether it's online or at home, to be able to enter to win. So that's kind of in a nutshell what Safe Routes Utah is. So.
Perfect. Thank you, Kristen.
Yeah.
Travis, you ready?
Yes. So as you create the, go through the process to create the Safe Routes Utah maps, maybe you identify the most direct route from houses to the school, but maybe there's still some safety concerns along those routes that are preventing parents from letting their students walk. Maybe there's some missing sidewalks, so the kids need to walk on the side of the street, or maybe there's a busy road that they would need to cross. So we have developed a Safe Routes to School grant program to help fund the installation of sidewalks or signals to help students get to school safer. Next slide. So in 2019, we actually had some policy changes that affected the Safe Routes to School grant program. We have made it so that the application is now more equitable, going to more disadvantaged communities based on whether they are a Title I school or not. So that way more of the funding goes to the communities that might not be able to have the funding to put in these sidewalks and signals themselves. We also put a small portion of the scoring to whether the applicant has had a previous Safe Routes to School grant project or not, but it's not enough to kick out a really good project. And what this does is it makes it so the projects get spread around the state a little better. So if there is still a great project, it's not enough to actually make it so that they wouldn't get the funding. We are also trying to better measure the effectiveness of this program. So we are doing a better job of enforcing before and after studies in order for the various agencies to receive the funding reimbursements. All right, next slide. So we have $1.36 million of federal TAP funds that go to the Safe Routes to School grant program annually. However, we have been able to transfer that into state funds. So that way we can maximize those funds so people aren't spending all the money on engineering and everything else that goes into a federal project just so that they can construct a small local sidewalk project. We feel that most agencies can do a sidewalk project with their own staff and can save a lot of money by doing that. So that way, by having that savings, we can award more projects with that $1.36 million. The grant selection team is comprised of representatives from the health departments, safety, local law enforcement, and UDOT staff. And the program is on a three-year funding cycle. So the applicants approved this year in 2020 will get their funding in 2023. And that's so we can better coordinate the state maintenance programs with the Safe Routes to School grant programs. All right, next slide. So just some quick statistics from fiscal year 22. We had 46 total applicants for a total ask of $6.35 million. And again, remember, we only have $1.36 million every year. And the project costs ranged from $7,000 to $356,000. And, you know, and that was, the $7,000 was a bridge that just needed some wood planks replaced going across the creek up to $356,000, which could be like a hawk signal or something to that effect. 10 or 22% of the projects were funded for a total of $1.27 million, and 9 communities were served throughout all 4 regions. So we were able to disperse that fund throughout the state. But the average project amount was about $41,032. Next slide. And with that, here's our contact information, Kristen Hoshor and myself, Travis Evans. With that, I'll open up to any questions that anyone might have. I think I saw one in the chat. I can get to that. So the question is, are the safe routes that schools define available as GIS map data that could be looked at together? For example, to see where other proposed projects could have a positive impact on safety or mitigating barriers. So I think that's a question for you.
Yeah, I can answer that. You know, that's something that we've wanted to do for a while. Right now, these are not GIS maps. We want to make it really simple for teachers to build these, or teachers or principals to make these maps. And sometimes with GIS, you have to know the program to build it. So we are working on a way to make these GIS maps and to make it simple for whoever is making the map to make it really quickly and easily. Robert, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, let me add to that just a little bit.
Yeah.
We actually have some initial drafts of a process to do that, to create GIS shapes out of these maps. Caitlin Marusi's in our office is working on this. COVID kind of slowed us down just a little bit on that effort. But yes, that is something, that's the direction we're headed. We'd like to have those shapes so we could not only overlay with project information, but overlay with crash information and identify, you know, basically areas that we need to be more effective in how we provide solutions and share that information out. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get a rigorous process out this year, this calendar year, and if not, by spring of 2021. So if you have any other questions we could help with?
Any other questions from anyone? I really appreciate this. A number of years ago, I had an opportunity to serve on our elementary school's community council and also volunteered as a crossing guard one morning a week. And I'll tell you what, until you've had a couple of close calls with vehicles going through school zones, maybe it doesn't ring home, but we really appreciate this. So thank you. And if anybody does have any additional suggestions or items on this, please feel free to reach out. And I especially like that question. If there is a project that we're working on and we can do it in conjunction with school safety, it just makes it even more pressing. So thank you very much, guys.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, let's see. Our next item is Wayne Bennion will be covering this. We're talking about our self-certification of our transportation planning process. This is something that WFRC needs to do each year and has to certify their regional transportation planning process. So I'll turn that over to Wayne to cover.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yeah, like Commissioner Scott mentioned, each year the Regional Council has the opportunity to certify that they are that the regional transportation planning process meets the federal requirements. And each year we work with UDOT and UTA to develop that certification, which you can see on your screen and which is in your meeting materials. I'll just briefly review what's in that document and take questions at the end. So after the resolution, the first couple of pages outline the organizational structure of WFRC and its committees. Then the technical, there are about 15 different technical elements of the planning process that are discussed in the next several pages. And then beginning on page 15, the major products of the planning process are discussed, such as the Regional Transportation Plan, the Transportation Improvement Program, and the Unified Planning Work Program. And then the last page discusses consistency with other federal requirements that are broader than just the transportation planning process. So with that description, I would welcome any questions or comments in terms of the Regional Council meeting federal requirements in terms of the planning process.
Does anybody have any questions? Mr. Harvey.
Just to comment quickly, there will be some who remember about 3 years ago that Mr. Binion couldn't grow one strand of hair on his whole head, and now he's got a face full of it. I just wanted to tell it. That's great to see you, Wayne, where you're at today. But nothing about his presentation. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Woo-hoo!
Thank you, Commissioner.
Very timely. Those of us that have been around for a little while especially appreciate that. Wayne's smiling, so thank you. We can always count on Commissioner Harvey to lighten the moment, so thank you. Good point. I think that most of us just trust and expect WFRC to be on top of this with all of the certifications that they have and the lengths that they go to be trained and be certified. So any other questions on this? If not, I would entertain a motion. This is another action item that we would need to recommend to the full council.
This is Mike Gailey, so moved.
Okay.
Second, Mayor Shepherd.
Very good. We have a motion and a second to recommend to the council that they approve this certification for WFRC. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, very good. Folks, that is the end of our 171-page agenda. So we appreciate everyone. There was a lot of work and time that went into this. Final item, our next meeting will be November 12th. That is a little bit of a change. We would normally do it on the third Thursday, but this is actually the second Thursday. A number of us will be involved in our annual Utah Association of County meetings, and so would be unavailable. So we appreciate the time change so that we can attend. Any other
will there questions? Be an update come out for the calendar to change that date? Because I noticed mine's stuck in on the 19th.
Okay. Yes, I will make that change. I wanted to wait until after this meeting today.
Well, that's pretty smart, Andrea.
Oh, thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea, for sending out these reminders. Many of us have many different meetings, and so it's always nice to get the reminder with the Zoom invitation and also the agenda so we can look those over. Is there any other business or items that you'd like to see on a coming agenda? I think everybody's ready to move on with their day. I would entertain one more motion.
Oh, I'm going to adjourn.
Okay. You can always count on Mayor Shepherd.
Hey, get me out of here!
Hey, thanks, everybody. We'll consider this meeting adjourned, and we'll see you soon.
See you guys.